Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Here comes a free kick. Oh, man! They have got a fifth. Direct from the free kick. Alexander Golovan. And beyond the Russians' wildest dreams, this opening day has got better and better and better.
And better and better. I think that's five times. As 5-0 was the scoreline, Russia v Saudi Arabia, the home team, getting the chocolates in the opener for the 2018 Russian FIFA World Cup. This World Cup report, thanks to the TAB. You can see every game live at the Keysborough Hotel. It's the St. Albans Hotel and the Welcome Stranger Hotel in Bourke Street. I'm not sure that's where Francis Leach is at the moment, the Welcome Stranger, but it's probably a similar type setup to where he is live in Russia as he joins us this morning on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Frank.
If I could be cosmonaut, I could not be further away from that place.
I reckon you look good in a cosmonaut suit.
I think the spirit is the same. I think the vibe is the same.
Well, break it down for us. What was it like in the build-up? And, of course, the home team having such a successful start to the campaign. Talk us through what happened at Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow.
Yeah, there's nothing better than the host nation doing well at the start of the World Cup because that's just the time for everything else. And, it was a brilliant performance from the Russians, which nobody expected. I mean, they've not been a great team qualifying. They didn't have to qualify as the host nation, and their performances leading up weren't great. But 5-0, it sets them up. And because of the nature of the tournament, it's all about goal difference and points. So they've got 3 points and a +5 goal difference. They'll probably get through to the next round, even if they split the results in the next two games. So that's fantastic for the tournament. Having been to four of them, you want the host nation still competing at the sharp end. So it's very exciting on the streets of Moscow tonight.
So that's a good point, actually, about the goal difference, because people would think, oh, 5-0, that's a good win. They'll take their 3 points and run. But when you're playing pool soccer, as these guys are for the next three or four games, having that difference is going to be a huge benefit. Does that mean they can start to change things up or rest some players, even though they're obviously one game in? But at the back end of qualification or the first phase, do they sit a few guys out?
Half. As a super coach that you are, you know, it's all about confidence. So they go in now knowing that they play well, they've got the opening result out the way, and they can go out there and know that they'll probably qualify. Can you hear that? That's the sound of Moscow's favourite sport. It's called the endless traffic jam. You think Melbourne has traffic problems? You've got no idea. But anyway, they're very happy with that result tonight. It's a brilliant result. It was 3-0, they would have been happy with that. And those two late goals just mean, they're through to the next round, I think.
Francis, is Russia a football passionate country? Like, I mean, is it
not the same way that we are? Like, they're big about sport, but ice hockey, I think, is their first sport, which is unsurprising. But they're very, very passionate about their national teams, and they're so passionate about how they're perceived with the rest of the world. So the recent politics of Russia and how it's being portrayed in the Western world matters a lot to the people here. And so for them to perform well here, to host a good World Cup, and for people to feel like they're having a great time here means a lot. And it's an incredibly modern city, Moscow. It defies the notions that you probably have of being a drab, bleak, Soviet city. It's not that. It's this massive, sprawling, magnificent city. And they want the world to know about that.
Yeah, because it's interesting, because I say to someone that has never been to Russia that They've won 5-0 and the sort of rather in the streets they're dancing and all joyous, they're disappointed they didn't win 10-0. And they're already ready for the next game sort of Ross Lyon style. But I mean, so is it all through the streets? Is there colour, excitement, all that sort of thing?
No, look, let me get this straight. Russians don't do exuberant.
No. They're not allowed to.
Smiling is a weightlifting event against gravity, so they struggle with it. It's not the way they do things, but they do it differently. They'll have their moments when they celebrate, but it's not their thing to be impulsive in that regard, the way that we are. And they're quite thrilled when they see Australians. We have a great time. I was a function of 600 Australians with a green and gold army. We had a drink, we had a laugh, we had a great time. We didn't smash anything, we got on the bus and went home. They were absolutely gobsmacked.
Nick Quinn's back for the Friday form. We love his freshly cut hair on a Friday. Good morning to you, Quinny.
Thanks very much, Daniel.
I love the fact you're drinking a 6-litre can of Mother.
Yeah. Explain this to the listeners.
What are you doing, mate? 6 o'clock in the morning.
Well, that's a good time to have an energy drink, isn't it?
No, it's not.
When is a good time?
Because what time did you get up this morning?
It didn't really go down, to be honest.
And what was your reason? You couldn't go down. So you're drinking 6-litre cans of Mother. This is why you're not sleeping, Nick.
Too much sport. The kids played tandem, have not been asleep. So big thanks to the Saint wife at home for at least letting me get some shut eye. But what a weekend.
Was there any food accompanying the 6-litre can of Mother?
No. Empty stomach. It's like taking medicine.
It's like drinking a can of kerosene is basically what it is. Good luck to you. Now, normally on the Friday form, we have the world's greatest form analyst, Dean Lester. But he's having a hiatus, a winter hiatus, which provides an opportunity for the winter specialist here on the Friday form. And Whitey has come up with an idea. Whitey, before we introduce our man, can you explain your championship concept?
Well, no winter specialist as such. That will be determined in 4 weeks' time. We have a winter championship. So we are going to invite a tipster to come in.
Oh.
And be the Dean Lester of the Friday.
Hang on, you can't put that pressure on.
A rotating basis?
Or? If he bets to a profit, carryover champ situation.
Carryover champ.
He comes back. If he doesn't bet to a profit,
he's gone.
We'll see you next year.
Oh.
And we crown a winter champion.
I like this.
Wow, this is good.
And there's a government supervision type of situation as well. So
is that what those four blokes are doing over there?
Three panel members over there. And Marianne Van Dorsen.
She's looking good, actually.
So government supervision,
sure,
government supervision can come into play if we think they deem that the betting was good but not profitable.
Right, okay.
But well,
we're
going with $100 to spend, and if we bet to a profit, we welcome Matt back next week.
Rightio. Well, our first contestant on the Winter Championship is Matty Welsh. Morning, Matty.
You do it properly.
We got a jingle?
Matty Welsh comes from the Eastern Suburbs of Melbourne. He likes playing... playing golf.
Hey, Daniel.
Going for walks along the river.
Going very well, thank you. Were you aware of the championship status?
I was not. And
neither was I. Good news.
I must say, still wiping the sleep out of my eyes. I'm not used to being up at such an early hour, but look forward to the challenge that Whitey's throwing down.
See, excuses already. That's,
that's a bit of a concern. The excuses early doors.
Although there's highlighter and computers going on over here. So there's a lot of... It's very
high
serious.
Tech.
Is there a computer?
There's highlighter.
And there's
different
highlighter.
Colours.
Well, that's unbelievable.
Maps.
I don't know what to
similar
do with
to
that.
Your form book.
What we do know is Matty's got a great eye. His trial file segment on Thursdays on Racing Pulse is
cult status.
His highest rating segment of that half hour.
Yeah.
Every Thursday.
Because it's Fellgate. It's better than Fellgate.
He does a great job. And hopefully you can do it for our punters this week at Moonee Valley tomorrow, boys. We're racing. And for the first time players, we have a look at the quaddie at the Melbourne meeting on a Saturday on the Friday form. And we try and narrow the focus for you to get your chance to get the quaddie and hopefully a few winners along the way elsewhere. But race 7 is the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow. 10 race card at Moonee Valley. And we've got 13 going around. Super Hussy gets a start with a scratching of Keno Town. And Matty Welsh, to you straight up, number 2, Miss Leonidas, is a favourite with D Dunn on board for Dwyer Camp. Tell me more.
Yeah, I really like this filly half. I was keen on her last Saturday at Flemington. She ran very well. She was closer to the inside down the straight. They ran extremely fast time there, and I think she's the horse to beat.
Ooh.
The one little issue is she does have a habit of missing the start, and particularly at Moonee Valley, we know it's a tight track. She won't want to be doing that, but she jumped pretty cleanly the other day at Flemington down the straight, and if she can get herself in the early firing line, she is certainly the horse to beat.
Horse to beat is at number 2. Who else are you playing with in your multiples? Who do you think might be a chance should things go well for them?
It's a pretty tricky leg of the quaddie outside of her, and given her penchant for missing the start occasionally, I think we need to go reasonably wide. Putting into our Cooler Spirit, number 3, she races very well off a freshen up. Damien Oliver in the saddle. She's run well at Moonee Valley in the past. I think she's certainly a chance, including Lael, number 5. She has a duck egg 2 starts back at Flemington, but had an issue there. Return to the winner's circle at Sandown last start for Mick Price. She's a very smart horse on the way up. Throwing one in at 50-1 here. Number 11, Geneva Diva. Trained by Link Sullivan. There was an issue there at Caulfield first up. She's a fast filly. And Look, there is a suggestion that with the rail out 4 metres on Saturday, it could be somewhat advantageous to be up on speed. So I'm throwing her in at Bolter's odds, number 11. And the other one I'm putting in down the bottom, number 14, the emergency you mentioned gets a run, Super Hussy. She's going to probably be last in the run, but as I've outlined, there's pretty good speed on paper here, so she'll be the one darting through late and hitting the line strongly. So I think wide leg of the quaddie to start. I was 2, 3, 5, 11 and 14.
Now, just a little bit of feedback from the government supervisors over here.
I think he's got the job.
The word that was just used before.
Yes.
That has never been mentioned in this studio.
That's the most impressive.
The government supervisors are taking notes there.
Real private schoolboy lair up, if you ask me.
It's a little bit of that, Nick Quinn. You're spot on about that. It certainly caught my attention, Nick. Any horses in this race caught your attention or the punter's attention at tab.com.au?
Miss Leonidas has been the best backed runner, 4 into 350. I want to ask Maddie about two runners that ran a controversial Quinella at Sale last start. Number one, Miss Norway, a $19 chance. And also the horse that appeared to win the race, number 10, Sharif's Choice, who's at 17. You didn't give either of those to a plug. You just don't rate that form line as strongly?
Yeah, probably. That's a good point, Quiddy. But also, Miss Norway does look ordinarily drawn out there in 14. Going to face a fair task to get across. And as I mentioned, there's a fair bit of speed drawn inside. So probably against her. That was a good win. It was a pretty well good rating race. They ran fast time and she sat deep outside the speed. So there was plenty of merit to her win. Sharif's Choice is going to get a nice run in behind them and probably would have been next best, but we can't throw them all in.
That's right.
It was controversial because they showed the race. Sharif's Choice won the call. The call that the numbers went up. Everyone's happy. And then about 30 seconds later said, oh, hang on a sec. That's not right. Miss Norway got there.
You were no doubt on Sharif's Choice clearly. By the sound of it.
Sounds I did like Miss it. Norway. Thank you very much.
Yeah. That's why you brought it up, Quinny.
Nice work. So pretty confident with the two, but 3, 5, 11, 14. The other numbers in the first leg at Money Valley tomorrow. Race 8 is the second leg over the Cox Plate distance of 20.40. Crimson and Clover will be paying attention. Because this is the program we're on towards the $5 million
4,000 meter race.
You're an idiot.
In Warrnambool.
Jericho Cup.
The 11 horse field is going around the 20.40, and Light in My Veins, whose recent performances for Kieran Maher has been nothing short of outstanding, almost picket fence style before the third, a couple of starts back. 62, 3 kilo Liam Reardon on board, back to 59. Matty, can we look past this?
Yeah, I think we certainly can, Huff. Right, he was excellent last start, and Liam Reardon, good young apprentice, rode him on that occasion. It was at this track and distance, and he meets a lot of the opposition he beat there, and that was his first go at 2,000 metres since being back in WA where he started his career. He's only had the two goes at 2,000 metres, and it was an emphatic victory. He ran very fast time for the day and sat three wide in the early stages. So from gate two on Saturday, he's going to get a perfect run in transit. And as you say, he's almost got the picket fence. He's won four of his last five, and he's certainly the horse to beat again on Saturday.
Right, if there's anything outside of number one, the toppy there with the 59 kegs, who are we looking at?
I think Pilote de Size got a nice chance. Was 1,400 up to 2,040 last start and worked up on that fast pace behind Lightning in My Veins that I mentioned. I think fourth up now, he should be fit enough and ready to show his best. He's been parading very well. He's clearly in good health. Just probably needed to get that fitness to a level that's capable of withstanding a really strong 2,040 metres. And I think now fourth up, he should have that base. Number three, Self Sense, comes back to the flat after a dominant victory in the Australian hurdle. He's had two starts over the obstacles and won them by a combined 16 lengths. But his form on the flat's just as good. He won at Caulfield going back three starts ago, beating Kawea in a somewhat controversial race where Kawea got in all sorts of trouble. But still won that and was second to Life Less Ordinary in the Wagga Cup, who is another horse who's flying. So I certainly think on the flat, Self Sense needs to be respected. The other one I'm putting in is number eight, Have Another Glass, over from Adelaide for the Sue Gents stable. She won the listed race, the Centaurus Stakes, going back two starts ago. It's a race she ran third in last year before coming over and running on this day last year in another race. And then she was second to Tatush, who's going to be very hard to beat in race 9 at Moonee Valley on Saturday. Inside Ali is some concern. Dwayne Dunn's going to need to get this mare off the fence at some stage because she does get back into the second half of the field. But she's the other one that I'll be throwing in. So 1, 2, 3, and 8 in the second leg.
And Quinny, any movers in that marketplace?
Yeah, Light in My Veins has been the best backed runner. Heads to the market at $4, just ahead of My Nordic Hero. My Nordic Hero last won a race.
One more time.
August 19, back in 2015, on the second line of betting. How do you assess him?
Yeah, I was batting up for him last start, and I just thought he was beaten fair and square by Lightning in my veins, and I just find it hard to see him turning the tables. Look, if I had to have a fifth pick, he would certainly be it, but yeah, I was happy to leave him out, and look, I'm pretty keen to throw that value in there of Pilote Desai, so yeah, he's in the mix.
He might be an improver. Now, you did mention Self-Sense had been running brilliantly over the jumps, won the Australian hurdle last start. Is it hard to assess a horse going from the brilliant jumps form back to the flat and on the back of what could have been a real gut buster last start?
Look, he did it extremely well off his pack in a maiden hurdle, came back a couple of weeks later or a week later and won at Caulfield. So he's clearly shown an ability to back up from a hurdle run onto the flat. And he's been mixing his... It's not like he's been over the jumps for three or four starts and suddenly, you know, 6 or 8 weeks since his last flat run, he's going back to the flat. His last flat run was at Wagga back on the 4th of May. So I think we can trust his flat form that he's going to turn up in that sort of Fettle.
He's $14 to get the job done again. Fettle as well. He's
Fettle, Pochon.
Really going
Fettle
wide here.
I was hoping you were going to have another crack at Pilote Desai, Quinny, but you opted not to read the odds out of him today.
No, Pilote Desai is not a nemesis of mine.
Pilote. And what's the Pilote paying?
$23.
$23 is our second pick in the quaddy leg. That's good
Dino
stuff.
Dino gets
for us.
Agitated with me because I seem to ask him about that horse every week and he seems to swat the suggestion away. And the one time I don't bring him up, he's got a good push.
I just like the fact that you've tipped my Nordic Hero, mentioned the horse 7 times, and Matty didn't mention it once. I think that's excellent. Race 9 is the third leg of the quaddy tomorrow, as over the mile at Moonee Valley. We've got 13 going around. And you mentioned in your analysis of race 8, Matty Walsh, that Tatoosh would be tough to beat. Down the bottom, number 13, Jamie Carr on board with the 54 kegs. At a barrier 10 over the mile, a bit sticky the gate, isn't it?
It is certainly a little bit sticky half. He is in outstanding form, this 5-year-old gelding. He's won... poor run, the duck egg on his form card, which is 2 back in Adelaide. He was 10th of 14 behind Manuel. Pulled up with an issue there, so we can certainly excuse that run. And as mentioned, he was dominant in beating Have Another Glass last start. It was with the gun run behind the leader and peeled out as they came to the top of the straight and just was able to put them to bed. So from gate 10, Jamie Carr, brilliant rider over from South Australia. She's had great success here in Melbourne already. She's going to have to weave a little bit of magic through the first 400 metres to make sure that this bloke gets in one off the fence, but does have that sort of 350 metre run into the first bend to do that. So provided she can get him across, he is the horse to beat. The others I'll be including, number 4, Akavuran, is ready to win now. I think he's going to take up the running off gate 1. He's had a 3 runs back off a long break. He hadn't raced since November of 2016, and he's just racing himself into form. I think he's certainly the hardest to beat. Another one for Liam Reardon, who has a good book on Saturday. Number 1, Amavatio, finally gets up to the mile. I've heard Dean talking about he's been waiting for this horse to get to a mile, and of course Dino goes on holidays, and now he does, so... Hopefully he's paying attention and having a few bucks on. But I think Amavatio backing up from Flemington last week in one of the fastest run 1400 metre races we've ever seen at Flemington. I think I heard Dean say it was the second fastest in history at Flemington that Aussie Choice won last weekend. So, look, he is certainly fit. He's done a lot of recent racing, Amavatio. He's going to get back, so he will need them able to make ground by this stage of the day. But he's right in the mix. The other one I'm including is Pemberley, who's first up here for... Kieran Ma. Trials have just been okay, but he does have a good first up record and he's going to get a lovely run in transit. So they were the 4 for mine in the third leg of the quaddy. Tatoosh, Akavuran, Amavatio and Pemberley.
13, 4, 1 and 7, Quinny.
Nothing for number 12, 60's Groove, who was heavily backed at his Australian debut, and the money has come again tomorrow, including one bet of 2,688 at the 650. Now the $5.50 second leg behind Tatoosh.
Yeah, tongue tie goes on as well. I think he's quite awkwardly drawn there in gate 2. He stays at the mile. He wasn't able to get in the race early at the mile, first up in Australia. I would have loved to have seen him either draw off the fence or step up to 2,000 metres. That was a very good run. He was strong the last sort of 150 metres there at Moonee Valley in his first Australian start. But as I said, I think there's just a few things against him to have him right at the top of thoughts at that price.
So what would you want to see him do maybe on Saturday before he becomes a betting prospect?
Look, if he does exactly what he did last time and then were to step up to 2,000 metres, he'd be heavily in thoughts the start afterwards. As I said, he can certainly win on Saturday, but gate two is maps to get back. It's a tricky barrier. I'd love to have seen him at 2,000 metres at this stage.
And you can't have them all in the quaddy.
What about the old warrior, Lord Durante? Nine now, track specialist.
And I tell you, he's going quite
here
well.
Here we go. There it is.
He was he
40
was,
to 1.
He could certainly be entertained. He could certainly be entertained. He was okay first up at Caulfield at the 1100. He was hitting the line very strongly there. It was a slowly run race at Sandown last start, the 1400 metre trip. And the fact that he got back and it was slowly run really didn't suit him. Mm. They sprinted home good late sectionals. Galaxy Raider ran the best last sectional of the day, just off the top of my head. And the winner, Peacock, led all the way. So it wasn't run to suit him.
Dropped 7K.
Yeah, just the sticky gate. I really hope they push forward with him from gate 14, because that's where he does his best work, is working early, getting across to the front or somewhere near the front. It's certainly not the worst here.
Two words, prefer others. Let's go to race 10, the last leg of the quaddie.
That's harsh. I gave it a good push.
No, I know.
It was actually close to my numbers.
I'm just going to shoot him down if you don't mind. No. I just quite like doing that.
Stick with me, Matty. You're going well.
There's a penchant for that sort of stuff. Race number 10, last leg of the quaddie. We've got 13 going around. Never Again, the second emergency, gets a start for McGarrett, who was scratched for Tommy Hughes. And we've got Belsonic for Jason Warren. Good horse, Belsonic. Had a couple of seconds the last couple of starts. Ben Mellum on board, but barrier 15 over the 1,200. Is that a concern for us?
It's not with a horse like Belsonic. He's going to get back anyway half, so I don't think barrier 15 is an issue. You'd rather him drawn out there than probably in one and getting bailed away on the fence. Excellent run last start. Probably zigged when they should have zagged, heading towards the inferior inside ground just before the home bend, and then quickly had to change course and come wide. He goes in the quaddie. He's right in the mix. Wide leg for mine, this the last leg. I think Dispatch, backing up from Flemington last Saturday, he was extremely well back, Quinny. From memory, he was about $5 into $2, as short as $2.40 late. He was just hammered there. Looked disappointing on face value, but they ran fast time. That was the Miss Leonidas race that I referenced earlier. And in spite of finishing outside the top nine, he ran 32.62 for the last 600 metres. So that shows just how fast they were going there. He finished 10th, beaten 2.7 lengths. I think he's suited back up to 1,200 metres. So number two, Dispatch, goes in. I'm going to include Sam's Image, number four, on the basis that it may be a leader advantage track. I think that he'll lead them up here. He didn't lead last start, but I think getting back up to the 1,200 metres on Saturday, he'll lead them up, take some catching. So he goes in. Grey Shadow, tragedy for anyone who backed it last start at Sandown. Missed the kick a length and a half and missed by a closing sort of half length. She should have won there. If she can jump with them, which she has done at her previous start, she'll be right on speed. She's goes in the quaddy. The other one I'm including is number 12, Usain Bowler. I think he is going to be very hard to beat on Saturday.
Usain Bowler.
Gate so, one.
So our numbers, just for those playing at home, 2, 4, 7...
2, 4, 5, 7, 12.
Right, 2, 4, 5, 7, 12. Our numbers, Quinny, market movers there?
Yeah, what does Egyptian Bullet need to get a bit of a plug? Keep sneaking under the radar. She's won 6 of 10, 3 in a row. And 20 to 1, her past two wins at Sandown and Flemington. No push there?
Yeah, no, certainly in the mix. As I said, it's a very even race. The other one I could entertain, including, is number 9, Lagerfeld. Had absolutely no luck behind them last start from an inside alley. Draws out, going to need a bit of luck. Probably gets back to the second half of the field, but he went to the line under the hardest of hard holds there last start.
So, amazing question, Quinny, considering she's not in your top four.
No, I just...
not in your top four either, Quinny.
No.
What about Spirit of Equator, who beat Belsonic and it was pretty impressive?
I must say.
And fresh air.
Yeah, no, I was very keen on it. I was very keen on it first fresh up, air. But I think it had its birthday there, and if you run the race three or four times again, I think Belsonic probably beats it the majority those times. So I think we got lucky with Spirit of Equator first up. Different assignment on Saturday, but it's one of the more even races you'll see, and you could go as wide as you like in the quaddie.
All right, there are our quaddie numbers. Now you've got 100 bucks to spend, a virtual 100 for the Winter Championship. Matty, what are you going to do with it?
Best of the day, race 5, number 3, Innkeeper. Going to have 50 the win. Race one, I'm going to have a play. I'm going to back number 3, Tahitian Dancer, 20, the win, and number 9, Dharma Sun, 10, the win.
Jewish.
And a Quinella in... Well, ooh. I've been thinking about this since the challenge was thrown down.
Government supervisors, look at them.
And they're writing it all down feverishly, Whitey. And a Quinella in race 8, numbers 1, Amavatio, number 4, Akavurin, and number 13, Tatush, spending $20 on that.
Right, yeah, 1-4-13 in the Quinella.
You didn't get all that.
Risk. I did. I got it all down. Not easy, but I did. Brent Harvey gives you great insight every Friday on the Friday Footy Previews. Back the little champ. Good morning, Boomer.
Good morning, boys. How are we going?
Going all right. You're a little bit cold today.
Yeah, got me beanie on. A little bit of a croaky voice in there. The flu's going around. It's getting cold. Love the beanies. Tracksuit pants, hoodie, and a beanie. Doesn't get much better.
It's beautiful winter stuff. No, it's great. Great, comfy winter stuff.
Beautiful.
Now, Force, before we get anything else, the doggies last week. You didn't play.
We don't play tomorrow. We played last week. We had a one-off game. Got our pants pulled down, unfortunately, by the best team in the competition, McLeod. And we've got tomorrow off.
So, you've got tomorrow. Everyone else plays.
Everyone plays. Off. So I hope it pours down rain.
Now, you didn't kick 6 and have 55 last week?
No, we didn't. We got beaten by about 8 goals, I think.
Smell a crisis.
No crisis. We're going okay for a team that's just
come
up.
Are you
going
to move on the coach? How's he trying?
We'll get rid of him soon and we'll see how we go.
you're happy to take over?
Yeah, no, I'm not.
I think that's where it's angling.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Local football, I'll tell you what, it's tough at local football. The coach wasn't there last night, so I took training.
Thinking for training.
Just frustrating.
Tell me, how many blokes did you have on the track? Because it was freezing cold last night and wet.
No, last night we had...
spirits low. Well,
we would have had 50 at training last night.
50?
Yeah, we would have had 50 at training. That's including the 19, so that's over 3 teams. There was a few boys... who only train on a Thursday night to rush in, have a shower and have a beer. They weren't there. There was no beers last night at training. The kitchen wasn't open.
Hang on a second. It's Thursday night. You haven't got a game on Saturday. The kitchen's not open.
Players were there. So the kitchen and the bar was open. But normally on a Thursday night we have a meal. Because we've got selection and stuff like that. But the ladies who cooked the meals weren't there last night, so the boys didn't hang around for too
cost
long.
Cost cutting.
Well, you haven't got a barbecue you could turn on?
Yeah, everyone wanted to go home.
I think it's
Thomas play
apart.
For Port Power.
There's signs. Cracks.
Oh, it's absolute debacle there at North Island. Oh. Real crisis time.
Give us 4 weeks. We'll see where we're at. I reckon we've got a big 4 weeks coming up.
You mentioned just then Lindsay Thomas.
I did.
Playing for the Port Adelaide Power last night. They were 57-point victors over the Western Bulldogs on Thursday night footy, which we all love. Everyone loves it. Boomer, what did you make of your mate's performance? Back in the team, Lindsay Thomas and Kenny Hinkley showing some faith.
Yeah, I think he played 2 games in the sample and played really well. He kicked 4 goals last week out of not many and came straight back in. So that was fantastic for Lindsay. I thought he played really well. I thought that was his best game for Port by a long way. Kicked the goal, missed one that he probably should have kicked. But he probably had an impact on 4 goals. I know he gave one off to Justin Westhoff. There was a couple of really little taps there. Still went hard at the football. Didn't hold back again. I thought he played really well. 14 possessions, a goal, set up a couple. I think he holds his spot.
There is a spot there because Jakey Mead looks like a good player but has had 1,000 opportunities.
Mm. Yeah, there's Need. There's Barry that plays a similar role. Yep. Both sort of half forwards.
Because Sam Gray's a lock. He's a good little player.
Yeah, he's a good player, isn't he?
So Lindsay, if he, like you said, if he keeps this up, and, you know, 6 months ago, no one would have thought he was there as insurance, wasn't he, really?
No, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, I've made a little deal with him. I've got a nice bottle of Grange at home that I haven't opened.
Cool.
And I said to him, as soon as you... if you win the flag this year for Port, I'll be on the first flight over and we'll sit down and have this bottle of Grange. Okay. I don't drink a great deal of red wine, but Lindsay likes it.
Well, what year are we talking?
That's a good question. I don't know much about my wine. I'll bring that information next week, all right?
But it was a good performance last night. We were talking earlier, Boomer, about expectations going into the game between the Power and the Bulldogs, and I was sort of thinking 7-8 goals. It ended up being closer to 10 with 57 points. The Bulldogs, what did you see last night? Were there any positive signs last night for the Doggies?
I think it was a really poor start, and that's an obvious statement, but whether Port came out upbeat and got the job done or Bulldogs just took a while to get going, that was really disappointing. Bontempelli looked like he... I won't say that. Bontempelli looked like a different Bontempelli in the first quarter, played really well after that.
Big second quarter.
Their injuries are well documented, but they lose another couple last night. Not sure how how bad McRae's injury will be, but Easton Wood looks like he'll be out for a long, long time.
Another hamstring for Easton
Wood. And it looked like a big one, didn't it?
Different one,
he did
yeah.
the big yell and the grab straight away. So that didn't look good, but... No, look, I think they're struggling. The Bulldogs are going to finish very low on the ladder. They need to go back to the draft, get a really good draft pick. We all know this is a good draft. And try to get... The injuries are massive. Injuries are massive in today's football. We spoke about Richmond last year. North Melbourne are going well with no injuries at the minute. There's a few other teams in the competition doing the same. Injuries are massive. And unfortunately for the Bulldogs, they've been hit by a lot of injuries, but they haven't been playing their best football either. So they've got to take some responsibility and go back to the drawing board.
You're right, the year off now. Just forget about it. Because the injuries, it's impossible for them to be competitive. I know the ladder says they're virtually gone anyway. But
yeah, they're gone.
The injury list, because Boyd's done his finger, that's an operation. Apparently there's Webb's done a thumb. So they're going to lose four or five out of that team on top of Morris, Redpath. Like, they're going to have... I think this is an experience. Wait till next week.
I think list management at the end of this season, and they'll be doing that right now. They know where they got ahead is going to be massive for the Bulldogs. Do they keep Wallace because he's in and out of the team? Do they trade him and try to get something in for him? Because I think he's a decent player, and some teams could definitely use him.
He'll go to Essendon. Well, get done.
They need an inside mid. Crows probably need an inside mid. So what's the best deal they can get for Wallace? Does Morris hang him up now with a
no,
year?
No, he can't.
He doesn't hang him up?
Well, he needs to hang in there.
Not now, not at right the end, now. Of the
end of the
season.
No,
year. No, I mean, no. He needs he goes to go again. Again next year. Absolutely.
Well, there was talk about him retiring last year, and he's had a lot of injuries this year. Did they say...
Forget that.
Okay, no.
We've got no defenders.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. They need
Adams.
Him to stick around?
It's a good conversation. What do the Bulldogs do? Because clearly what's happened in the last 18 months, in the end of the year, 2 years, has... caught them all by surprise. Coming off the premiership, they would have thought this was the chance to really have a long reign of success, and something has gone wrong along the way. Is it the players? Is it the way they've been perhaps trialled in different positions that hasn't worked? And I think what you said before, Boomer, about getting back to basics for the Bulldogs, why don't they just play the blokes where they play them? Where they played them and had great success. There seems to be a lot of flipping and flopping with players and positions in the last little while with the Bulldogs, trying things rather than giving them the confidence to go and play where they've played really well before and just letting them do that.
Yeah, I think they lack a couple of key position players, and that's probably why they're trying things around. Billy Gowers is not a full forward. He's a decent player, but he's a third forward with his height. If he gets a third defender, he's going to be a better player. They need a big forward. They probably need a centre-half forward.
Well, they've got one. He's playing in the ruck.
And they got Redpath.
$1 million a year.
Yeah, that's a good point. Roughhead, he's in and out. They need to look at him. Do they move him on and try to get something else in? And just get a lot of picks in this draft and rebuild from the bottom up. Get the young kids in. That's what I would be doing if I was list manager at the Western Bulldogs. I think it's Sam Power, actually.
Yes,
he is, yeah. So they're already a young list, Whitey. How much younger can they get?
They are a massive mystery to me. They really are. I mean... They did win the premiership only 2 years ago, and I know they've had a lot of injuries, as Scott said, but there were still 10, 11 premiership players out there playing last night, and I think it might be unfair to use last night as a reference because of the injuries they got during the game, but at the end of the day, at quarter time, they were 5 goals down and probably could have been 7 or 8 goals down.
Well, they didn't have the injuries at quarter time, after that.
And they just couldn't score. So something has gone really wrong, and I don't even know whether they know what it is. But they need to really forensically look at what the hell has happened in the last 2 years to get them back to where they were, because it wasn't a 1 year out of the box situation when they won the premiership, because they had played in the final series the year before and played some really good, strong football. So
is it?
I don't know. I actually don't know.
I don't notice because I'm not there, but complacency, it just looks like complacency.
They don't have the ruthlessness.
Last year.
They don't have that manic pressure. They don't have that ballistic ball movement, which wasn't necessarily there in their premiership year, but the year before.
Are you talking dynamism?
No, I'm not. Not with them, the way they're playing. But look at their next six. Their next six games. This is horrendous. North Melbourne, Geelong, Hawthorn, Melbourne, West Coast, and then Port Adelaide again.
Oh, I have a spell.
So they're all currently in the top 10.
Well, we're going to get a good pick.
So you're saying bottom four, Whitey. So
they're going to really...
be 4-14.
I'd be surprised if they don't crash now.
Yeah, I think you just put them all out the pasture and away you go.
Wood, McRae, Boyd out, if Webb's thumb's no good.
Yeah.
There's four more,
on top
as you said, Scotty.
Morris, Adams.
Adams.
The one similarity between the...
Redpath.
Yeah, the one similarity between the Bulldogs and St Kilda is that leadership vacuum. And so when things have gone wrong, the leaders on the field haven't been able to steady them because, you know, they lost Boyd and they lost Murphy last year. If you look at that leadership group of six and you look at St Kilda's leadership group of six, there's not a lot of leaders on that in that football club.
I think St Kilda have been more healthy. I think they're more of a
No, I'm not talking about the injuries. I'm talking about when things have gone wrong, just examine who... Because I think St Kilda have underestimated the loss of having Revolt, Dempster and Montagna all go at the same time.
Yep. I always look underneath that, Whitey. I always see the leadership group, and you probably know what you get from them every training session and every game. I always look just underneath the leadership, the next tier of leaders, who they are, and their performance-based, and what they give you, what sort of output they give you consistently, because they're the next crop of leaders. When this crop of leaders leave, they're probably going to take over. And majority of the time, they're not youngsters, but they're in the middle of their career. And I always look at that tier to see where they get their improvement from.
Just on Port Adelaide half, I was watching them last night, and some of the football they were playing, you think, that's as good as it gets. You know, some of their chains from defensive goal square to goal or from a centre bounce clearance to a goal. You think it's like watching Glenn Maxwell play with some of the stuff they do. You know, the trickery and the dynamism. You know, then they go and do something stupid. And you think it's like Glenn Maxwell trying to play the reverse sweep or trying to go inside out over cover where you don't have to. And all this. What are you doing that for? But that's kind of what they are, and they're a unique beast because every time you see the team on the screen, there's a star here, there's a star there. Oh, geez, he's good. Like, you know, Rockcliffe last night was a really strong player for them. He's now in four games since coming back from injury. Three times he's had 25+. Wingard's gone up the midfield. He's had 60 possessions and 15 clearances in the last two games. We saw what Robbie Gray did last night, just broke the game in about a 15-minute burst.
He does that.
They're everywhere. Stars.
Jack Riewoldt's back. Good morning, Jack.
Morning, gentlemen. Where's the welcome back Cotter music?
You got to be in studio for that, Jack.
Good producing, that. That should have happened.
Well, that's a little bit of a setback for our man at the back, who's a bit
make
flat.
Make it happen, Maisie. Come on.
Well, I've got the chair all nice and warm for you. It's ready to go, mate. What are you doing?
Well, I heard that wasn't enough chairs in there, so if I was coming in, I'd have to sit on Boomer's lap. So.
I think I'd be sitting on your lap, Jack.
There's a lot of love in the room. Hey, Jack, things are going okay. Not as perhaps swimmingly as perhaps forecast by many pundits. You're not quite at the top of your game yet, the Tigers. Is that about right?
No, we're 9-3.5, so things aren't going too bad.
No, a long way from being bad. Don't get me wrong.
We didn't play very well last week, which was really disappointing. We sort of set ourselves to play well over there at Port Adelaide, and the Adelaide Oval's hasn't been very kind to us this year, especially in contested possession, which is something that we really pride ourselves on. So, look, a couple of lessons for us, and against some really good sides, you've only got to see what Port Adelaide did last night against the Bulldogs at the Adelaide Oval, and we topped Adelaide sort of round two when. They had most of their squad in there playing too. So, look, we're playing okay. We'd love to play better, but we're looking forward to getting some of our premiership players from last year back this weekend.
So let me take you back to what Alex was saying in that grab and the play on about being able to expect to be pretty competitive each week. One of the hallmarks of the dominant teams of the last 20 or 30 years is they get to a game and they'd know they can win. Are you in that phase with your team? Because you have been one of the dominant teams, clearly, in the last 18 months or so. Are you at that phase where you get to a game and just you know you can win?
Oh, look, I think we go into every game thinking that we can win. Focusing on the outcome and the actual result of winning is a trap that I reckon some sides can fall into. For us, it's really focusing about the process and bringing what we can bring. Like, where there is certainly an air of confidence that if we feel like we can bring our best football, which obviously is that contested possession, high pressure style of game, if we can bring that and bring that to a level that we think is the level that we can put out, then we feel like we can win, well, all weeks. Look, it's hard to play at your best all year, and I don't think a side's, well, not in my memory, a side's gone through the season undefeated. So you have little blips in the radar, and you learn little lessons over the year. And I said this last year, at this time of the season, where we sort of went through that phase where we lost four games in a row by under a goal, that we'd rather be learning the lessons now in this part of the season than at the pointy end when you can't come back the next week after you have a loss.
Mm. Jack, what's the intel saying about Geelong? The stats say their defence changed dramatically since about round three and they're one of the best in the comps.
Well, Scotty, sorry, mate. I'm actually sitting in the car park at the moment about to go into the Oppo analysis meeting, so I'll be blind guessing if I gave you an answer. But, no, look, they're a great side. They've obviously added to their midfield depth with Gary Ablett returning home. I reckon they've got some really sort of guys that aren't those first names that you think of when you think of the Geelong Football Club that really add stuff to them and add some real depth. Tom Stewart's a guy that's been hailed as a possible halfback flanker All Australian this year. They've actually got a pretty young defence, but what they've done is they've gelled really well together, and they play well behind the ball. So we're under no illusions that this week's going to be a really important game for our football club, as it is for their football club as well. And we'll be needing to play right up near our best to come away with the result.
Brett Deledio is with us often on the Breakfast Club from the Giants. He's been good enough to join us again, first time in a couple of weeks. Good morning, lads.
Morning, Half. Morning, fellas.
I'd like to say that we catch you ready for a big game and ready to go. Of course, the Giants have got the bye, so you haven't got that as a club. But how are you tracking physically, mate, and mentally after your injury?
Yeah, it hasn't been that great, to be honest. It took a little bit of time to get over the injury. Look, it's I thought I was well and truly past all of my calf issues, but it reared its ugly head again, which is not always great, mate. But I'm tracking pretty well at the moment. I'm just about to go for a run, actually. I'm kind of down in Melbourne. I've got my little nephew's funeral today, which is not ideal, but going to have a run in about 10 minutes after I finish speaking to you guys and pick that off and hopefully continue moving forward.
I read about your nephew in the online stuff. You know, it's just a horribly sad situation, but I imagine when you have that going on in your life, it puts a calf injury into a bit of balance.
Yeah, you're not wrong, mate. I've a calf injury is going through my worries at the moment with everything that's been happening in the family. But yeah, mate, I'm just very grateful for the health and well-being, especially my two little daughters and myself and my wife, so a calf injury is the least of my worries.
So, Lids, just back to the injury, how did it happen? Because I think everyone was sort of caught off guard by it, all you included.
Yeah, mate, I suppose I was just coming back from my hammy, and which turned out like it wasn't a lot because we had the 6-day break. We decided to rest it, and it just took a little bit longer than we thought to get over that little bit of fluid that I had on my tendon, my hammy. And just as I was building up, getting ready to play that Adelaide game, I had a session on the Friday. I was going to have another session on the Sunday because we played the following Sunday against Adelaide. It just started to get, it got really tight, and we went in for a scan, and sure enough, I'd done a little bit of damage to the tendon. And because of my previous history, I've had to take more time out just to make sure we go slow and build it up and get it strong. Not too unlike what I did this time last year.
So does it go ping? Does it sort of, I've done it again? Or is it more, this doesn't sort of feel right, we better just sort of ask a few questions? How does it happen? Because you see it in games, like it happened with Eastern Wood last night, and it's really obvious. But was it a bit different for you?
It's a little bit different with my calves because I've had so many of them now that I thought I can understand which ones are bad, which ones are just like little warning signs just to say, right, you might need to go and get some massage or some needling or whatever. But this one, it was a little bit tight, and I was running no worries at all, doing some sharp leads and that sort of stuff out of the square. And then all of a sudden it got to the point where pushing it further, I thought, well, I might do some real damage to it. And I don't know whether that's pain threshold or whatever, because it was feeling okay. But as I said, I've done quite a few of them. It turned out that I had done a bit of damage in there, and there's a bit of a bleed. And it's for six weeks of rehabilitation, which I'm very aware of what that's like at the moment.
What are the experts, you're probably sick of talking to them about it, Lids, but have they got theories, or is it just you're just unlucky and keep rehabbing?
Well, I've got my own theories, and certainly not an expert, but yeah, I think it's, you know, this one come on as a result of what happened to my hammy. It's all the same side, left side, and, you know, we just deloaded a little bit to try and get the hammy right, which then caused, you know, some troubles in the calf. But I also think that my early days, like I was back training, you know, mid to late October sometimes, and going all the way through to be played again the next year, and hardly missed a training session or a game for 7 or 8 years. And I think that's probably just taken its toll a little bit, you know, in my latter part of my career.
So you're down here at the moment training and going for a run in preparation for the next couple of weeks of rehab. What are the other boys doing at the moment with the week off?
They just had 4 days off from Sunday through to Wednesday. They were back at on deck yesterday having a little session. Then they went out and saw the kids and had a full day of clinics, which is good. And then, today I think a light training session, tomorrow a main session, and getting ourselves ready to fly up to Brisbane and take on the Lions.
How important was the win against the Gold Coast and the way you played and the emphatic performance that the boys put out?
Yeah, I think it was just good to consolidate after the Adelaide win. We got a lot of confidence out of beating the Crows over there for the first time at Adelaide Oval, and to come back out, the scoreboard says that we dominated the game, but I think that the fact that we also tackled and harassed really well would be the most pleasing thing, I think, from Leon. It certainly was from my point of view watching in the stands. But, the boys' attitude to continue to play the right way throughout the whole game is the best thing, especially when you're up by 10 goals halfway through the third quarter.
Do you feel that the team's back, or is it too premature, or was there enough, especially after that Adelaide, to think, you know, it's still there. This is still very much game on this year now.
Yeah, I certainly think that it's still game on. I wouldn't say we're back. That's probably a little bit premature, as you said, but I think, you know, the boys certainly got a lot of confidence out of, doing the simple things well against Adelaide and then following up again last week. So, continue to work on those fundamentals of the game, and hopefully we can get back, Tom Scully and Toby Green, and maybe Zachy Williams later in the year, and you never know what can happen. But there's a fair bit of water to pass under the bridge before that happens.
Michael Checker is the coach of the Wallabies, and he's been good enough to join us on a Friday morning. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Great to have you on board this morning with us. A big test match tomorrow night, of course, in the best city in the world, Melbourne. You'll get a big crowd at Amy Park. And David Pocock will still be slowing the game down, much to the disgust of Neil Francis, former Irish player, who's come out whacking him during the press this week.
Yeah, well, look, I sort of talked about it yesterday. You're entitled to your opinion, no doubt about it. But maybe sometimes terminology isn't actually that necessary, you know what I mean? Just say slowing the ball down. I think the way they come out about it, it's a bit of a carry-on. But, look, that's, I suppose you've got to stay relevant somehow in some instances. You know, to try and do it,
He did call him, for those that don't know, he did call him a cancer on the game, David Pocock, which was, as Michael says, a pretty ordinary turn of phrase from formerly Irish international Neil Francis. Just on that, though, the way that he was able to manipulate the game in the Wallabies' favour last week at Suncorp, do you think that they'll adapt to that and change their style this week?
Yeah, no, I think that, with the game on the ground, there's always so many parts to it around how the game flows. It's always the circumstance of what the game is like. And, in fact, in last week's game, Ireland had the majority of the possession as well, you know what I mean? So that does always go in favour the team who likes to play, aggressive on the ground in defence, because the other team's got more ball. So it's a bit of a numbers game, really. This week, if we can have more ball, it'll probably be less, which is the idea, obviously. There's going to be a little less relevant around what happens on the ground defensively. So he's really good at it, but he does a lot of other things to his game as well, you know what I mean? So we'll be looking forward to getting him out there again.
Have they surprised you, Ireland, with what they've been able to do over the last sort of 12 to 18 months? I mean, they're ranked second in the world now. I mean, it's not something we usually expect from the Irish.
No, but it doesn't surprise me at all because I coached over there for 5 years, many of these players themselves. So they've got quality players and a great system that is dedicated. It's centralised and dedicated to bringing players through to play for the national team. And they've had a steady rise, very consistent, well coached, and a lot of good players. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And it's a big, big challenge for us. I mean, them coming out here and after the very short preparation as well. So, three matches is always good too. You get to play 3 weeks in a row against serious opposition. So, really good for us where we're sitting in our build up towards this year and then the World Cup next year.
I'm really keen to ask you about how the Wallabies now are set up with the changes to the Super Rugby with one less team, and the feeling was that if there was less teams, it would be better for the Wallabies moving forward. Have you seen that immediate impact, or will it take a little time before you see the benefits of it, of what's been the change to Super Rugby?
Yeah, I think in relation to player quality, probably not as much because these players were all there last year, if we're talking, yep, in reality. But in relation to the way the players have come into national camp this year, there's been a lot more collaboration by the four teams with us as well. And they've been, last year there was a bit of a question over, training, fitness, et cetera, but this year everyone's trained harder. Well, we've come into national camp, with the players in better condition, and that just gives us a chance to, at international rugby, that gives you a chance to have a foothold in the game. Once you're fit enough and you're ready for it, then you can have a crack. If you're not fit enough and you're not ready for it, then your skills don't really count when it comes to kick off at international footy,
Yep.
So tomorrow night, back to the island, were you surprised at their lineup in the first test? I mean, they're bringing a few guys back for tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think, in the early part of the year, me personally as well, I don't really try to keep away from the opposition as much because it's so much to do with our own team. So you don't really, probably, your investigation on the opposition is not as much as it may be later in the season when you're feeling like your own team's handled and, everyone's in good form and understands what we're doing as well. But, look, they made a few changes, but one of the teams over there, Leinster, who's like one of their big provincial teams, had a huge season, won the double over their European Cup and their domestic league as well. So they were playing right through probably to a week or two before the tour left. So they probably chose to leave some of those players out and put players in that had been training with them for longer. So that could have been the reason why, but they're back to their, I suppose, what they consider to be a more regular starting outfit. But there's still a lot of quality players out there last weekend as well.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.